The following live presentation by Rabbi David Aaron is brought to you by Israelite, inspiring a renaissance in Jewish living. To learn more about Israelite, please visit our website at www.israelite.org. Additional contact information is available at the end of this presentation. Thank you for learning with Israelite and enjoy the experience.
The word in our dictionary that comes closest to appreciating the oneness of God is love. And that the metaphysical picture of the Kabbalah, that in the beginning there was just this divine light. When God wanted to create the world, he caused a withdrawal from the center of his light, creating a space. Within that space, he created vessels which are very other than the light. Vessels that are very multiple. And those vessels are within the light, and then God gives of his light to those vessels. That's a picture of love. This really was love. That's what love is. Okay. And yet the light surrounds the vacuum. The light fills the vacuum. 1 + 1 = 1. And last thing we did, we kind of focused on the implications of that vis-a-vis parents and children, and see how the metaphor kind of carries through in our relationship with our parents and relationship to our children. Now I want to talk a little bit about the relationship between men and women. And I once mentioned, in passing, how at a wedding, we have sheva brachot, we have seven blessings. One of the blessings we say under the chuppah, under the wedding canopy, is Asher Yatzar et Adam B'Tzelmo. You, God, who've created mankind in your image. And the question asked is, well, is this really an appropriate time to say such a blessing? Would it not be more appropriate to say this blessing when a child is being born? Right? Then I see the formation of the image of God. The answer is no. Because when do you really see the image of God? When the male and the female unites. That's the image of God. Because as you remember, we learned in the verse, God created man in his image, male and female, he created them. Well, did God create him or did God create them? The answer is yes. God created one being that included two sexes. And that's the image of God. A oneness that includes multiplicity, and not only multiplicity, but includes opposites, and yet a oneness. That's the mystery. That's the mystery and the ecstasy of love. That's why God said it's not good that the human is alone. Remember, we learned that verse. Rashi brings down a midrash that says something very interesting. He says, why is it not good that the man is alone? Not that it's not psychologically good, like he's lonely or something, but rather it's not good for reality that the human being be alone. Why? The midrash continues. Because if man is alone, if he is single, then beings would get the wrong picture and would say, man is single on earth, God is single in heaven, man is God on earth, God is God in heaven. So God decided it's not good that man is single because it would give rise to a misunderstanding, a philosophical misconception. Okay? So God took this being, split him in half, and now there's these two parts, which are equal but different, but two sides of one whole, that need to come together. What is that going to accomplish for me, in terms of the Midrash? But of course it will accomplish for me, because I will understand that God isn't single, just like man isn't single, but rather, just as man is a oneness that includes multiplicity, so too God is manifest as a oneness that includes multiplicity by remaining one. The one in the many in the one. It's a transcendental, it's a oneness that we're not really so familiar with. And just as God created for this being a helper that would be opposite to the other half, so too the creation of human beings is God's Azer Kenegdo. Right? Just as the woman who was the, so to speak, the otherness, was born out of this oneness and is built into a being that is opposite, parallel to the other side, so too, metaphorically, our relationship is to God. That the human being is the Ezer Kenegdo of God. Right? The human being is the otherness that was included in the original oneness and is given birth and is developed and ultimately brought face to face with God. And just as the first man and woman were back to back and the goal was to bring them face to face, so too the goal at Sinai was we were standing face to face with God. And that was the completion of that evolution of the expression of God's oneness, whereby the human being who was the otherness evolves to a place where there can be this relationship of face to face. And that image of face to face is a climax in the Jewish experience. That climax is reflected in the temple. Because you might know that in the temple, what was in the core of the temple? It was the Holy of Holies. And in the Holy of Holies was an ark. And on the top of that ark were two figurines. Are you familiar with this? Ever see pictures of this? Have a book here with pictures. Two figurines that have wings that would go like this, but they would have faces of children, these two figurines. Okay, they're called the, let me get it right, cherubims or cherubims. Right? Or cherubim-bim-bim-bim, something like that. And they were facing each other. And one had the face of a little girl, and one had the face of a little boy. One has a girl's face, and one has a boy's face. That's in the Holy of Holies. And the Holy of Holies are these two faces, which are opposite sex, facing each other. That's where Moses would hear the voice of God. In the middle of that, right? He would put his head there, he would hear the voice of God. That's what they said. And we're also told that when the temple was destroyed, a miracle happened. And when they walked into the temple, the two faces had turned away from each other. So these two figurines, which are almost like a barometer, they say that sometimes the boy's face would turn away from the girl's face. I mean, it was this mysterious thing. It was a barometer of the relationship between ourselves and God. Because one face is, so to speak, symbolic of God's face, and the other face was symbolic of Israel's face. And that's the goal, that face-to-face experience of love and oneness itself is a revelation of God. So the wife, husband, wife metaphor is a very important metaphor for Jewish teachings. That the Song of Songs, which is considered to be the Holy of Holies, when one would read it, they would think this is a romantic poem, you know, of a man and a woman. And yet it is really about Israel and God. So it's very, very important to understand how central this image of love. I am creating the image of God with me could be translated as I'm creating the image of love. Right? Not that God is love, but love is the word that comes closest to appreciating the light of God. God is so revealed to mankind. And so when a man and a woman unite, that is the union of the opposites, the oneness that can include opposites and yet still remain one, is itself really the reflection of the divine. Yes, sir.
I'm sure there is, but what's the significance of it being children's faces?
It's the innocence. It's hard not to like a baby. Babies are so cute. You know? Why? Because they're exactly what they are. Only when we get older are we successful at being fakes. Right? We can fake people out. Very often we can't. But we try to. Children are exactly what they are. Even when they're rotten, you know that just that's a kid. You know, it's hard to dislike a kid. If you dislike a kid, you're real mean. I mean, it's hard to dislike a kid. I think it's very hard to dislike a kid. I had an idea starting a campaign or people would have buttons with a picture of themselves when they were a kid. It would warm up the world. I'm telling you, if you would look at a picture of me or your friend, see what they look like a kid, right? Because I'm still that kid. Layers and layers, but I'm still that kid. It's like I asked this woman, how old are you, 36? She says, also. Also. That was a great line, also. That's included. That's included as I'm also 36. So I'm also a kid. There's still a little kid inside. And that's the purity. That's the sweetness. That's the sweetness of that, those two child's face. But the idea also is the opposite sexes, and that's in the Holy of Holies. Okay. Now, just as what we learned about man's relationship to woman and woman's relationship to man, that's applicable to our relationship to God. And just as man was looking for his soulmate, okay, and would not be satisfied with an animal who would be subordinate to him, but was looking for someone who would be parallel, who would be other, and yet of equal value, so too that relationship is to God. Alright? That God is seeking to enable us to evolve to a point where we can stand face to face to God. Right? We can stand face to face with God. This is the bracha that a Kohen gives to the people. Yivarecha Hashem v'yishmarecha. May God bless you and guard you. What does it mean to bless you? It's to fill you up. It's to elevate you. It's to increase you. And guard you so that that increase will not lead to something negative. Right? May God shine His countenance upon you. May He look at you. People need to be looked at. It's part of my reality. We talked about that. When I'm playing with my children, and I got my daughter's hanging, upside down from, some bar, and she's going, "Have a look!" So important, just that look. Just that look of acknowledgement. May God bless you with the light of His face. May you always feel that God is looking at you. But more than that, it says, "Yisra'nei panav eilecha v'yisem lecha shalom." May God lift His face unto you. Unbelievable bracha. May He lift up His face to you. May He look up to you. Not only look at you, but look up to you. That you should feel respected. That is a blessing, and that is an ideal that we aspire to. Feel that kind of relationship with Hashem. Okay. So, the metaphorical relation between husband and wife really extends towards the relationship between ourselves and God. What does it really mean to love another human being? We said it's to make a space. How does it differ from, how does falling in love differ from what I would call ascending in love, or climbing in love? Or Eric Fromm uses the terminology standing in love. What's the difference? Falling in love is not making a space in my life to include another, but it's rather collapsing everything. It's not an extension of self. It's not a thinning of self to make space for other. It's just a total surrender. It's this fall. We lose ourselves in the process. That's really falling in love. Our view of love is, in the beginning there was just me. Okay. That's not enough. When God wanted to create the world, He caused a withdrawal of Himself from the center. We see that love is an act of will. And love is a will to act. First step. Love is not something that happens. It's ultimately something you choose to make happen. Most people don't believe that. Right? They just don't believe that. They hope it's just going to happen. It's just going to be so obvious. Falling in love, it hits you when you least expect it. Falling in love is I'm at a party. I look over across the room. She looks over at me. And something happened. I can't explain it. It was unbelievable. It was just so obvious, right? And that's what, you know, the media kind of promotes. It's strangers in the night, exchanging glances, lovers at first sight. It sounds so easy. It sounds so easy, and people just expect it's what it is. So falling in love happens. Falling in love is a feeling. But ultimate love, genuine love, standing in love, finding love, is a will to act, and an act to will. You know? It's a willful act. I have to do something. I consciously choose to want to love someone. Now, I might choose a candidate that I feel will be a little easier. But true love is not this like, oh, they embrace, they just... Is that true love? It's like there's a scene in The Graduate where this fellow is basically having an affair with his fiancée's mother. Welcome to America. Okay? This man is having an affair with his fiancée's mother. And it's a very intense affair. And there's a point where he says to her, I can't go on with this. I can't do this anymore. She says, well, why not? Why not? We love each other. He says, because I don't even know your first name, Mrs. Robinson. Right? And that's it, Mrs. Robinson. Right? Cuckoo Pitches. That was her middle name. Right? I didn't know your first name. How can you not know your first name? See, people can fall in love without knowing each other's name. You know, and that's what the films teach us. They say this. They say this is possible. You know, it's like a standard scene would be a guy driving down the highway. He's in this sharp sports car. And just in the other lane is this other attractive sports car. He goes beep beep. She goes beep. He goes beep 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 beep. She says beep beep. Right? And this is really something. This is really something. The next scene is they both turn off into a motel, and that's when it becomes X-rated. That's love. That's what happens. And people think that's love. And the more we see this in the movies, the more it reinforces that I hope it's going to be that simple. I hope it's going to be so obvious. Love is work. Love is real work. It's a labor. It's the labor of love. It's work. You know, a new relationship is going to take work. And that's it. It's beautiful. But it is the challenge of life, to make a space in your life. Falling in love is, oh, we just love everything the same. You know, she loves sports, I love sports. She loves pizza, I love pizza.
She loves the breeze.
Right? She loves Pink Floyd. I love Pink Floyd. This is a match made in heaven. This is obvious. We're meant to be. Everything is just so wonderful. You know you fall in love when everything's so wonderful. Right? You know that you're ready for real love when you're able to see what's not wonderful in the relationship. And what I do, shidduchim, I often ask people, don't tell me only what you like about this person. I want to know what you don't like about this person. And until you can honestly tell me what you don't like about this person, you still don't know this person. Because there's bound to be something you won't like. And it's better you know it now than later. Right? And I did a shidduch where I thought it was a great match. And it was going very quickly. And this woman said to me, I haven't fallen in love with this man. I see some of the problems. I see some of his faults. But I see some of his strengths. And I really feel we can make a very beautiful marriage. And I said, go ahead. And I felt that's it. Then you're ready, even though it was going very quick. Because she was very realistic. And they do, at least outside, seem, you never know what goes on behind doors, but they seem to have a wonderful relationship. Now, does that mean I don't have to have feelings or there's no chemistry? No, I'm not saying that. But that's not the be-all and the end-all, and you don't make your decisions based on that. It's work. It's really a lot of work. That's why so many marriages are breaking down. People aren't willing to put the work in it that takes to do the job. It's work. It's work. You know, I don't know if I share this with you, but I must have told you that like 2 days after my wife and I were married, we met this guy on the street. And he said, "Oh, I'm sorry I wasn't able to make it to your wedding." And I said, "Oh, it's okay." I didn't know who he was anyways. And he says, "But I'll give you a gift." And I go, "Oh, fine, you know, write the check too. You know, fine, great, give us a gift." He says, "A piece of advice." "Oh, you know, talk is cheap." And he said, my advice to you is never ever go to sleep on an argument. Just make a rule in your life that no matter what's going on, you will work this out before you go to bed. Otherwise, it gets into your bones. Otherwise, you say, "It'll pass by tomorrow morning. We'll both forget about it." You just don't do that. Right now, my wife and I have been married for 2 days. When you're married for 2 days, you don't believe you could ever have an argument. You think this is so cynical and so negative, you almost feel like this guy has so much chutzpah to even suggest that two lovebirds like us would ever, ever have an argument. Right. And yet it does happen.
Right.
Because you argue very often with the person you're most closest to, because you care. Right? If you have a relationship with somebody you don't care about, so their opinion doesn't matter to you. But of course the person you love the most, their opinion really matters to you. And what they think about you really matters to you. And therefore the chances of argument with the person you love are very high. Because there's so many things. You said this, how could you say this? I didn't mean it that way. Oh, you didn't. Right? And most of the time arguments are miscommunications. I thought you meant this, you thought you meant that. But a lot of people, their attitude is, "Let it go. Forget about it." And then there's marriages that break down 10 years later. A lot of it can go back to the first year. You know, I hear people say it was bad from the very beginning. Well, why did it go on for so long? Because we spent so much time wasting our time, not communicating, not opening it up, not really respecting each other the way we should by saying we're not going to go to sleep until we work this out. So falling in love is a feeling. Falling in love is something that happens. Falling in love generally accompanied with a feeling of total peace and tranquility, a feeling of everything's wonderful, everything's perfect. And then you should know you're in a danger zone. Because this is never perfect. It can't be perfect. Why? Because we're part of a becoming perfection. And so in order for a love to be genuine, it's got to be part of a becoming. And if it's not part of a becoming, it's not going to work. It's not going to work. And a person's looking for somebody perfect. If they were perfect, they wouldn't want to marry you. Because you're imperfect. Right? So what do you want a perfect person for? You want an imperfect person that these two imperfect people can work towards more perfection. So therefore, love and Judaism starts with a hole. There's a lacking. There's a deficiency. And it's happening within the context of that deficiency. And we're working together to grow, to develop, to include each other. And love is responsibility. And that can only be because there's an otherness. There's a me, there's a you. But if there isn't a me and there's a you, that's what happens when we love, we collapse. There's not a me, there's not a you, there's this I. But then when people fall in love, they often do things that are irresponsible. Of course it's irresponsible, because we're not able to respond to each other. Because it's not a you, there's not a me. We just have this expectation that we think alike, we feel alike. Very hard. Someone asks you, "Can I come to your house for Shabbos?" "Oh, sure." "Don't you think you should ask your wife?" "Well, of course." You'd say, "Okay." "Yeah, of course. How do you know that? How can you assume that? Isn't it at least respectful to ask, even if you think you know?" But that's this assumption that you think like me, I think like you, that we're one and the same. But we're not one and the same. We're one and the different. That's the oneness. Right? That's the real oneness. Where two people who are different can be in a state of oneness. Where I can make a space to include you, and you can make a space to include me. Now, of course, you've got to decide how big a space you're able to make. Because ultimately, this philosophy could suggest that you could be married to anybody. Because it's all about making that space to include another, and they're very different. But of course, we must be realistic. And it could be that to make a space for this kind of person would take a bulldozer, could be dynamite, to have to open it up so big. I just can't do it. It's asking too much of myself. Until you really understand the differences between you, you haven't really begun the true work.
Right.
You haven't really begun the true work. Okay. Now what? Yeah, you.
From before about the angels on the ark thing.
Yeah.
You said one was Israel and one was God.
Yeah.
Which?
Oh, I think the man was God, and yeah, the boy was God, and the girl was Israel. Israel is referred to as the female. Okay. That's why when we talk about God, we often talk about God as a he. Why? Because the she part of God is within us. Okay? So when we're talking about God, we're generally talking about God as experience outside of us. So that's why the he side of God is most talked about, even though the she side of God is as important. It's just, but is less talked of, because the she side is the immanent, it's the Shekhinah. The indwelling spirit is feminine. The transcendental revelation of God is masculine. So therefore, since really that aspect of God is within ourselves, we rarely talk about the she part of God, not because it's any less important, it's just because that's just that's just the situation of the discussion. Yeah?
I have a question about the falling and coming up part. Is that, would you describe that as just like the chemistry? And I was curious, with like Shit of Theme, is that a component or not?
Okay.
Somewhat like of a negative.
Good. So look it. The whole idea of shidduchim and matchmaking really follows this whole principle of this oneness that includes otherness, giving of myself to other. In other words, the shidduch setup is a setup which maximizes seeing a person's otherness. And not losing sight of that. Right? So that we can really enter into relationship. If we enter into relationship whereby I don't have a certain distance before we get closer, then how am I be able to maintain my objectivity and see you for who you are? And very often, people project on the person they're dating who they want to see them to be. And it's so subtle, we don't even realize we're doing it. And it's very, very dangerous. Because a lot of people get married to somebody other than they thought they were getting married to. And it takes them a while to wake up and say, you know, I've been projecting this on this person this whole time, and it was never them. I was dating a woman, and we were engaged. And it was Motzei Shabbat, it was raining, and I was dressed in my darkest suit, and I was wearing a black hat, which I wear if it rains, you know. But I don't always wear a black hat. And I came to the door, and she opened the door, and she said, "Ah, just like I always pictured you." Does that make sense? We've been dating. Why do you picture me? I'm here. You don't need to picture me. Here I am. I said, "What do you mean?" She said, the way I always pictured you. So I realized that I'd been dating this woman this whole time, and she'd been seeing another man. What was really frightening is I was the other man. Right? And I hated his guts. Okay? What do you do, right? What do you do? People project. People are very often more in love with love than the person who's playing the other role. You know, remember me? Right? They say, we're in love. You know, they don't even know who this person is. They're just so enthralled with they think they're in love. But they're not in love because you don't know who I am. So the whole shidduch process is all about getting to know who I am. And you know how you make sure you don't make a mistake? Is you don't get involved physically. Because that's the best way to lose objectivity. I had a student who'd been living with this woman for 5 years. I asked him, "Do you want to marry her?" He said, "I'm just getting to know her." I said, "You've been married, you've been living with her?" He said, "Yes, yes." And I'm starting to really consider marriage, and you know, I'm starting to discover. I dated my wife for 4 months. Okay, we were engaged for about 5 months. We got married, right? We're married 13 years. Okay? Obviously, you get to know a person more and more and more than things you'll never know. Forget it. You'll never know during dating. You'll only know when you get married. There's no way you can know this. Right? And there's things you don't even know about yourself until you get married. You'll be shocked. You'll say things, I said that? You know, it's only within the context. It's a whole new game. You don't even know yourself. It's like when I was dating women, so you're trying very careful. This is before I was dating men. Right? You have to let a person know who you are, because on the shidduch you want to somehow represent yourself so you know who you are. And I would come back after a date and say, why did you say that? That's not at all who you are. You kind of practice like trying to present yourself. What do you want this person to know about you? And then you really realize, why am I saying these things? Is this really me? It's an amazing challenge. Because you really want the person to understand who you are, and you start to realize how much you don't know yourself. You know, you don't know yourself. I want you to know who I am. But who I am is often changing. And who I am will probably transform based on who we become. So it's very hard. It's very, very hard. And so the shidduch process is really, you know, hands off, with intention that we're dating for purpose, not for fun. I'm not saying that you shouldn't have fun, but that there's a sense of intention over here, that we're not just hanging out and it's just going on and on because we enjoy each other's company. Because what happens is you end up making a mistake. You just, you know, get used to each other and get attached to each other when you really start to think about, I'm not ready to make the kind of hole in my life it takes to include who this person really is. But as time goes on, I'm not even seeing who they are. I don't want to see, very dangerous stuff. Very, very dangerous stuff. Yes?
Is there a time that if someone knows that they're in the process of growing religiously or spiritually, whatever, that they're not ready, that they should know that they're not ready to be with someone? Or do you think that you can continue to grow individually and with someone you're with?
Every stage in life is important. You gotta crawl, and there's a certain amount of time that's appropriate. Right? At a certain age, you're worried about your kid. He shouldn't be crawling, okay? But you'd be worried about your kid if he wasn't yet crawling either, okay? And so too, there's a stage to be single. It's a healthy time. It's an important time. And nobody can say exactly how long that is, except for God, you know, who ultimately decides that I needed to be single for this amount of time. And it's such an individual question. Everybody has got to know for themselves, and they can ask people who know them, do you think I'm ready to be married? You know? I was very close friends with a woman when I was in high school, and we became frum together, and I was part of the same group that was celebrating Shabbat. We were very, very close friends, and we came to Israel, and we were still very, very close friends. And she said to me, I'm interested in dating and getting married. Do you know any of the guys in Yeshiva? Now all of a sudden I was challenged. Like, what do you mean by that? I thought we were friends. And she said, well, you're right, we are. And I'm looking to get married. I said, oh, okay, sure, we're just friends. And the whole time I said, we're just friends. But then when she asked me to fix her up with somebody that I knew, I said, well, there's this very cute guy that's in the Yeshiva. You think, you know, maybe this would be appropriate. And I was feeling upset about it. Oh, why am I upset? I mean, we're just friends and had no intention, and I don't want to get married right now. And so, sure. So I fixed her up with this guy, and I was getting angry. And I was getting angry at this guy. I was getting angry at this girl. And then I started to realize, hey, maybe we weren't just friends. And so that at that point I said, oh, you know, maybe I better consider getting married because I might lose her. So then I asked my friend to go out, and it was retarded. It seemed so stupid, you know. We always used to go out. Now we're gonna go out. We were going out. No, I don't want to go out as friends. Now I want to go out as like a shidduch. And it was like, oh, okay. So now what are we gonna do that's different? Well, I'll pay. So we went out for pizza. We used to always go out for pizza. But now we got the check and I pay. And that's a shidduch. You know, like now we're ready to get married because I'm going to pay. And it's just, the whole thing was stupid. It just felt stupid. There was just no way. So, was that my soulmate or not? At the time I wasn't sure. I was so confused because we were friends, but then well, if we're great friends, maybe we could be great marital partners, but it was very, very confusing. And so if you lose touch with where it's going, then one sets themselves up for real possible heartache, real possible heartache. But in the should have process, you know, the way it goes, and I'm sure you're familiar with that, somebody knows somebody, and they imagine, or you notice somebody, you ask around, but there's a certain awareness of what's going on. And sometimes that's lost, and that can be frightening too, that people just like, oh, you're my beshert, you're my soulmate, you're the one, I know it, it's you know, our names have the same gematria, it's obvious, and together it adds up to love, you know, and if you take the square of it, and you multiply it by 51, and then you add 21, it equals Hashem's name. It must be, you know, like people go, wow, you know, watch out, they're nuts, you know, and it happens. I'm telling you, I've made shidduchim, people come up to me after like 3 days, we're engaged. I said, no, don't do that, you know, no, you did it, you brought two souls together. I think I brought two nuts together. You know, like, not so fast. Be careful. You got to be really careful. Right? Too many divorces. You just don't want to take a chance. On the other hand, there's a certain leap of faith. And there's just so much you can know. It was like, when I was dating my wife, I wanted to know, what is she like with children? So I thought, oh, I got a great idea. So I orchestrated a situation where we went to some friend's home who had children. Right? And I picked up the baby. I said, oh, look, what a cute baby. And I handed the baby to my wife. Right? At that time, well, not yet my wife. And I almost lost my wife. And she was holding his baby. She looked at me. She said, don't test me. I said, I'm not testing you. Why do you think I'm testing you? And she said, don't test me. She said, what do you know how I will behave with my own child? You know, there's some people that when it comes to strangers' children, they're great, but their own children, they're horrible. And there's some people that are great with their own children, horrible with other people's children. What is this going to prove? Nothing. Take them back. I said, yeah, you're right. Bring in the five-year-old. See what she's like with that one. You know, there's no way of knowing. There's just no way of knowing. So there are surprises. But when a person's dating, they have to get to a point where they feel, I'm mature enough to make the space for the surprise. There's always going to be a surprise. There's no question that one's going to wake up and realize that they thought they were going to marry Rachel and they ended up marrying Leah. All the time. You know, that's what happened in that story. And so we need to be aware of that. But when you understand love is work, and love is making that space, and love is the challenge of life, and that's what we're here to do, right? And to give of myself without infringing and without destroying who you are, do I have to, you know, do what you want in order for us to be one? Do I have to be who you are in order? Now, can we be very different and yet one? Yes, we can. But it might be difficult. Now, I don't want to get down on falling in love as if it's the worst thing, because sometimes it's the only way to get people kind of like hooked to go ahead with it. Because when you really understand the responsibilities implicit in genuine love, many people would just not do it. They understood the kind of work it really takes to maintain a good marriage. Now, what do I mean by a good marriage? I mean, there's certain marriages that they don't see each other. You know, she's off in Boston and he's up in New York, and they kind of wave to each other from the plane, and they never argue because they never see each other to argue. I mean, there are relationships like that, and maybe they're happy with it, but it's not the ultimate relationship where we're avoiding each other from communicating. And communication is like number one on the list, I think, in a relationship. Because communication is like, I make that space, I'm hearing you, right? Hearing you. I did a shidduch workshop in New York, and I asked people, when you're going out, how can you give a person a sense of space, even on the dating level? Because that will be really very helpful, right? And you will feel whether this person, in fact, is appropriate. Can they make a space at this minimal level, right? So I asked people, share, has there been a time when you were dating and you felt this person wasn't giving you space? So one woman put up her hand. She said, yes, I was dating this guy. We got to the restaurant. The waiter gave us each a menu, and he took the menu out of my hand and said, I'll order for us. And she said, that was it. You know, he, where's my space? Or I was dating this guy, and he would speak so close to my face. You know, drives you nuts. You know, this person keeps coming up to you. You know, I got the point. It's your nose. Gotta be very careful. Or this person uses my name too much. That's really annoying. Like, how are you, Dave? Good to see you, Dave. So, Dave? You know, Dave? It's something that bothers me, Dave. And drives me nuts. Don't use my name so much, please. Well, why not, Dave? Well, because I don't like it. Okay, Dave. Anything you say, Dave. If you don't want to use your name, Dave, I won't use your name, Dave. Okay, Dave, so what do I want to do? I mean, like, lay off. Get out of my space. We all have personal space. You know, some people need more, some people less, but part of love and part of relationship is learning how to make space for people, you know? And so when you're dating, you want to be able to give this person some space and feel if this person gives you space. But then you want to feel if this person acknowledges your otherness, right? So how can you acknowledge otherness when you're meeting somebody? Well, part of it is using their name, but not too much, right? But using their name is really important. Do you acknowledge a person? Once in a while, do you use their name? Or how many times do I have people say to me that they went on this date and this person talked all night and asked me not one question, right? So at least fool them during the dating period and ask them some questions until you're really not interested. But, I mean, that's the sad thing. It's like, what's wrong with this person? We're going out and they talk all night. They should know that there's a number of reasons why that could be. One is insecurity. They're so uncomfortable with themselves that they talk because they're so uncomfortable with themselves. Or the other is that they really don't care what you have to say. And if they don't care what you have to say, then don't think they're going to care too much more later on either. It's all part of making that space. It's all part of acknowledging that otherness. And then giving of yourself to this person. Do you feel that they're giving of themselves in any way to you? Now, how much can you give of yourself to a person when you're just dating them? Well, part of them is give them at least your ear. You know, listen. You think the person's listening, right? If the, you know, are they listening to you? You feel that they are giving of themselves to you. That's really important. That's really, really important. And one thing that we need to be aware of is that gifts are very dangerous. Gifts are very dangerous. Because gifts can sometimes be a way of not giving of yourself to a person. Right? And so, that's another level. It's, how do I give of myself? Is this person giving of themselves? Will they let me give of myself to them? Like, I met a guy, he said he was dating, the women he dated were just so together, he felt he had nothing to give them. You know, and he felt, I don't know, there's something about them. They just come on like so together, and they give me this feeling that, you know, they don't need anybody else. So a person needs to feel needed. And so, of course, you don't start opening up all your laundry and saying, well, listen, I want you to know right up, look, this is our first date, and I want you to know that I'm a this, I'm a that, I'm a that, I'm a this. That's not realistic because maybe this person could make a space in their life to include those kinds of imperfections, but not on the first or second or third date, right? And so some people are just too open with their otherness, too open with their imperfections, and are too quickly telling people, I want you to know before you go out with me, I snore. And if you can't handle that, we can't get together, okay? Just know that I snore. The guy's, fine. You're not giving this person a chance. Maybe they'd be willing to buy earplugs. You never know. They're not expensive. But at a point in my life, I'm ready to do that because I feel that we can really evolve in our marital relationship. In addition, love is commitment. Just as covenant is commitment. I love you. Do this. I'll be hurt. If you do that. I mean, there's lots of things you can say, but not that I'll terminate a relation because you'll do this. And so that's part of the problem of living together before marriage. Because people think that if we live together, we'll get to know each other better, we'll be more prepared to live together. The statistics I saw said that there's a higher rate of divorce among people who lived together before they got married than after. And that would make sense, because you'd think they're the most prepared. Obviously, that guy who was living with this girl for 5 years and still was getting to know her is a good example of that. That, you see, when people live together, there isn't a commitment. And therefore, we are masters of hiddenness. We can conceal so much of ourselves, not only from others, but from ourselves. And so we're totally comfortable. And then things come out of us that we didn't even know would even come out of us. So when two people are living together, or when they're married, but they're just still living together, meaning that certainly a person could say, Hari Atmei Kudeshet, pass over the ring, but the truth is that they really did not make that commitment. And there was still something that was not all there, and they'll hide it, and they'll hide it, and they'll hide it. And really, the relationship is conditional. It's like I always advise people, you never marry anybody with the expectation that they will change. It's not fair. You just can't do that. You know, well, I like him, but, you know, I don't like his weight, right? And I'll marry him if he changes his weight. And if you tell me right now, you promise to me you'll lose weight, then I'll marry you. You should say, I don't like your weight, I want to work on this, you want to work on that, that's different. But I love you, fat or skinny, I love you. And because I love you, this is important to me. That's a different thing. But you just can't expect a person to change. Right? That doesn't mean people won't change. People will change. But that can't be the deal. Because it's not a deal. It's like this guy comes up to me. I'm in a pizzeria. I'm eating my pizza. He comes and give me a mazel tov. Right? I gave him a pizza. So he says to me, give me a mazel tov. I'm getting married. All I have to do is come up with $18,000. So what are you talking about? You know, what are you talking about? He says, yes, I've been working on this for so long, and finally she agreed, under the condition that I put together $18,000. I said, well, I felt so sorry for this guy. Like, what kind of relationship is that? If you put together $18,000, I'll marry you. And what if he comes up with $17,995? Well, what does that mean? What is that? Right? So I think what it meant was she was asking him to prove himself to her. Can you provide... I want to see what you can provide before I get married to you. When I was dating my wife, I said, I don't know how I'm going to make a living. She said, I don't care. I said, why not? She said, because I'm not marrying a person because of how they're going to make a living. Right? So I said, okay, excuse me, I have to call my stockbroker. But, you know, that's how a person has to enter into it. That's how a person has to enter into it. When I was dating my wife, I was very quiet for like the first 4 dates, first maybe even 5 dates, right? Because I'm a very quiet person, right? Believe it or not, quiet people are people who do public things, but in private life they're very quiet people, right? So I'm a very quiet person. And so I was very quiet. Now she didn't understand it because she heard that this guy gets up and he says that he's not talking, right? What's wrong? Right? So I was quiet. But she would talk. And so we were dating, and one day I turned over to her and said, why are you interested in me? I'm very quiet. Right? Like, why do you keep going with this? She said, because I believe a relationship is to work on something together. Right? And so I don't have any preconceived conditions. And when she said that, that's when I opened up and started to talk. Since then, I haven't stopped. Too bad she said it. Right? It has to do with giving people space. Giving people space. And acknowledging their otherness. And giving yourself to that other. If you do that, then you have a much greater chance of having a very successful marriage. But it's work. It's work, you know. You don't agree on everything. If you did, I think it's strange. But it'd be bad if you didn't agree on anything. That would make it hard too. Yes, there's got to be an attraction. There's got to be a sexual attraction. If there isn't a sexual attraction, then you're setting yourself up for serious problems, right? Because we are also sexual beings. If you make sexual attraction at the top of your list, then you're crazy. Because right? You don't know what will happen. You don't know if anybody will get sick. You don't know if this woman will start putting on weight or this man will start putting on weight. I mean, I know guys who got married to women who most people would think aren't so attractive. After they got married, beautiful, you know? And then I know guys who got married and guys thought, oh, wow, she's beautiful. And you know, in a short amount of time, well, you know, you don't know. There's nothing signed here. So unless a person enters this with the maturity of saying, I want to marry this person for this person, and I know that we need to make that mutual space for each other and give to each other, respect each other. But respect, boy, that is critical. If you don't respect this person, it's not going to work. Because that's their otherness. You have to respect them. And that's the din in the law. That's the judgment. Judgment is, I respect you. You have your boundaries, and I respect those boundaries. I respect that aspect of yourself. Right? I'm willing to give of myself to you, and you will make that space and give yourself to me. But you need to respect me, and I need to respect you. But when people don't really respect each other, then again, they're setting themselves up for serious, serious breakdown. Serious, serious breakdown. Because judgment is connected to borders, right? What's yours is yours means I respect. You have a yours. You have your privacy, okay? You have your feelings. I respect the fact that your feelings are not my feelings. And that we might not feel the same thing, right? And it must be maintained. Otherwise, once again, breaks down. The woman cannot live for the man's life, and the man cannot live for the woman's life. And yet, they must make that space, mutually include each other, give up each other to each other, and that's how it will work. And it'll still be a lot of work. Right? It will be work. And then children just makes even more work. But life is a becoming. Life is a challenge. And the most challenging aspect of life are relationships. Whether it's a marital relationship, or it's a friend relationship, or parental relationship, whatever kind of relationship. These are all different colors of the spectrum of the light of love. And and they all are based on the same principles of making the space, the otherness, giving of myself to otherness, allowing otherness the freedom to give of themselves to me. It always works to its own relativity. That's the way it works.
Like, how do you know that sexual part of your relationship will be okay once you're married if you haven't had any
physical
contact before you're
married? Because Judaism doesn't see sexuality as the essence of the marriage. It sees it as an important aspect to it. But if the other aspects are there, then the sexuality will be worked out. In other words, people play such an incredible role on sex as a way of uniting them in their relationship, when it's really a good way out. You know, the whole notion of midah, the whole notion of menstrual cycle, 2 weeks we're not touching, 2 weeks we are touching. I tell you, the 2 weeks where you're not touching is providing the space essential to meet each other when you aren't touching. You know, you need that space. It's part of this creating the space. And it has to always be like that. But a lot of couples are just sexually bored with each other. Because they can do it whenever they want, and they did, and they're just tired of each other. So they look for other sexual, you know, sexual ways for excitement, or they need these books on 321 ways to do it. When you're in love, one way is good enough. You know, when it's an expression of love, it's never the same way, right? But when it's not an expression of love, you got to think of all these meshuggah things, you know. These guys are making all this money on figuring out things that can't be done anyway. So I mean, like, it's just ridiculous. What they're, you know, it's a crazy, right? This is crazy, right? Took a while for me to pick that up. Right? Took a while. Yeah, okay, yes, Laura.
On a shit-up system, though, I don't see how you can love someone before you're married. Like, I can see you seeing qualities, but love only grows with time. I mean, you can't. Obviously, it's stopping you from falling in love with a person. So how do you...
Because Love is work that can be done during the Shidduch period. We are sharing, we are giving to each other, we are listening to each other, and that is part of developing a real sense of love. But until the commitment happens, you really haven't gotten to the next stage of real love. And when I look back at my relationship a year ago, or 2 years ago, 10 years ago, you look and say, that was love. Wow. You look back, you say, you realize how much more real relationships are. And so, when two people are under the chuppah and they think they're so much in love, what they'll realize was, that was nothing compared to where we are now. But that's work. Now again, I don't want work to sound like it's so heavy, it's like, you know. But it's work on being sensitive and conscious and aware, and it's hard. And it's very fulfilling. It's most fulfilling. But gee, this is a society we're in have such poor models of this. And the movies have convinced us that there's another form of love. There's this romantic love that really lasts, and this romantic love where things just flow so easily. It's hard for people to get it out of their heads. That that's in the movies, but in real life, there is romance, of course, but there are times when we gotta work at things. You know, it's like people come in and say, well, gee, we don't love each other anymore. Well, so then, love each other a little more. No, do you understand? We don't love each other anymore. So, love each other a little more. No, you don't understand, because people think love is a feeling, and love is not. Love is an action. Right? It's a mitzvah of love. It's not a feeling. It generates a feeling, but it's not a feeling. It's something that it's a feeling is a symptom, but it's not. But love is an action. I have to act in a loving way to another person, and then I am loving them. But it's a verb. It's not something that you feel necessarily. So while you're dating, you might not feel that incredible love, but you feel the potential for that incredible love. You feel an attraction. You feel a certain chemistry. That's important. But question is, how important, what priority does it take, you know? And the fact that two people might have a very sexually satisfactory life before they're married doesn't guarantee that they'll have one after they're married anyways, right? Because before there was a feeling of like, you know, we're not married, there's a feeling of maybe